Realizing the gift of life I have received, I shall strive to live each day to its fullest, like the Buddha who tirelessly works to liberate all. Good morning, everyone. Wonderful to see all of your smiling faces here this morning on Zoom. I only normally check the news maybe once a day. And so usually when my home state of Minnesota makes the news, I find out about it from somebody asking me, oh, how are your parents? Are your parents okay? And then I have to go on the news and find out what happened in Minnesota. And it's usually some sort of a weather event. Either it was really cold or there was a tornado or a flood. And then I'll check the news and then I'll call my parents and ask how they're doing. So this, of course, happened last week. Reverend Nagata, actually, we were emailing back and forth about the service that we had this past weekend. And he and I were emailing back and forth the early part of last week. And he said, oh, you know, I've been watching everything that's been happening in Minneapolis, and it's just hard to believe. And so at this point, I hadn't heard the news about the tragic death, killing of George Floyd. And so I switched on, opened up my computer and started scrolling through images of the streets that I was so familiar with, having grown up in Minnesota and regularly going to these places in Minneapolis and St. Paul and seeing just righteously angry protesters in the streets, seeing buildings burning, and you know, seeing familiar backgrounds completely turned upside down. And for me, the most striking image that I saw was one of the Minneapolis skyline taken from coming in from the western side. It struck me because there was this familiar skyline that I grew up seeing. I grew up in the western suburbs of Minneapolis, and so we would regularly drive into Minneapolis. And some of my earliest memories are of looking out the window and seeing this skyline. And when I would see that skyline, I would, you know, this feeling of excitement would rise within me because I knew, okay, there's the city, there is our destination. It's sort of like, for those of you who live down here in the San Mateo or on the peninsula, as we drive north on 101 or 280, you know, there are those points where, you know, there's that point in 280 when you kind of, you know, come around the bend past Brisbane and you kind of go up the hill and you come down and you can sort of see, you know, now you can see the Salesforce Tower and you can see the San Francisco skyline and you know, okay, you know, now I'm coming into the city. And there's that excitement. For me as a child, it was, you know, the excitement of the science museum, the zoo, you know, maybe the Dayton Shopping Center where they had the Christmas show we would go every year. And so I see that skyline even today, and I'm reminded of that excitement and that joy of my childhood in the Twin Cities. And so to see that skyline then covered in black smoke, billowing from multiple locations in the city where you know, angry protests were taking place with good reason, and where there was parts of the city were burning, it really, really shocked me and struck me that this place, Minneapolis, Minnesota, this image that I had of it, that was my reality. But there's a whole other side to that place, a whole other reality that I had not encountered up to this point in my life. I grew up as a small child, I lived in the northwestern suburbs, a suburb called Brooklyn Center, which directly borders the city of Minneapolis. And my father at that time was working as a police officer at the Brooklyn Center Police Department in the Minneapolis metro area. And as a new police officer of junior rank, he worked the night shift. And so some of my earliest childhood memories are of my father waking up to get ready for work as I was getting ready for bed. Me in my pajamas, he putting on his police uniform. And, you know, I think some of my clearest images from my childhood, from that those early years of my childhood are, you know, kind of eye level for him. And that was his belt, his police belt that he wore. And I can still see clearly in my mind the sort of the pressed pattern of the shiny black leather. You know, he had his handcuffs and his holster for his pistol, and he had his nightstick and all of these things that I saw. And that was my early association with my father, and his care and feeling safe and protected was also an association that I had with police officers. And I carry that with me to this day. And as a white man living in America, I have not had an experience that would give me any other association personally with police officers. However, this is not the reality for everyone, and we're hearing about this and seeing this. And so as I read the story of George Floyd, who went into a grocery store and purchased a pack of cigarettes with a $20 bill, and then the owner of that supermarket called the police and said that he believed he had been given a fake $20 bill, a counterfeit bill by Mr. Floyd. And then the police arrived at the scene and proceeded a series of events that ultimately resulted in the death of George Floyd, very tragically, and in a way that was totally unnecessary. And as I read that story, I thought, wow, I've got to check in with my parents about this. And so I called my parents and to check in and see how they were doing. And they were both shared in the shock and the anger of those who had taken to the streets in protest. They said, you know, this is so wrong. You know, and my father said, you know, this is, you know, not what should have happened. You know, if somebody there's a counterfeit bill situation, you know, the police should show up, should interview everybody, gather information, take down contact information, and let everyone go about their business while the police carry out an investigation. Both of my parents were in complete shock and disbelief. And I thought, I need to hear from the voices of those who were impacted by this event directly. And so over the past couple weeks, I've been hearing the voices of those who are there in Minneapolis, who lived in the same community with me, having a very different experience. I heard from the members of our own San Mateo community, our African-American friends who have experienced similar difficulties living here in this area. My friend, Reverend Marilyn Bussey of the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church, just here in the North Central neighborhood of San Mateo, made a really powerful comment at a town hall with our mayor and our police chief here in San Mateo. She said, imagine if it had been an animal that had been treated in that way, that had lost its life there on the street as a result of the activities, the actions of those police officers. The People for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, you know, the Society for you know, the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they would be up in arms. There would be large and loud protesting, you know. But this was a human being. This was a human being who lost his life in this way. What more cause for outrage and frustration and anger? I read an article written by Candace Montgomery and Miski Noor, who are leaders of the Black Visions, which is an organization working for justice and the improvement of the situation for African Americans living in the Minneapolis area. And they write very powerfully. They say, before there was George Floyd, there was Philando Castile, shot by a police officer while being pulled over during a traffic stop. There was Jamar Clark, shot by police who responded to a paramedic call. Christopher Burns was strangled when two officers used a chokehold. And David Smith was restrained by police officers before he died of asphyxiation. These were all Black people killed by police officers in or near Minneapolis." End quote. So as a follower of the Buddha's teachings, I say with clear conviction, shining in the illuminated by the light of the Buddha Dharma, that these Black lives matter. For me, Minneapolis is a realm of peace and joy, similar to what we call the world of heavenly beings, the world of the devas. But I recognize that that is not the case for everyone. And this is the nature of this world that we live in. We call it samsara. We call it the saha world, the world of delusion. Some live in comfort and pleasure. Others face great difficulties. Genshin, one of the wise teachers of our tradition, he describes six states of existence, six ways in which we find ourselves, lifetime after lifetime, moment to moment. These are called the six paths of birth. The most difficult and painful is the hell realm, the realm of pain, of confinement, of anger, of aggression. There is the realm of the hungry ghosts, of unsatisfied hunger, of unsatisfied desire. There's the realm of the animals, who Genshin says the life of an animal is the life of being hunted and pursued, to constantly be living in fear for one's own life. There's the realm of the asuras. The realm of the asuras is a realm of fighting to preserve one's own comfort and to gain comfort. And then there's the realm of the humans, this realm where we dwell. The realm of the human realm is the realm of being aware of pain, able to listen, hear the Dharma, and to listen to others, to listen to one another. And there is the realm of the devas, the realm of satisfied desire, of comfort. And the devas live in this comfortable existence. They live in these beautiful palaces, this serene, pristine environment. But it's said that when difficulty arises, when someone becomes ill, when there's a problem, that person is immediately cast out. And so the realm of the devas is also a realm of self-centered living, of enjoying comfort for oneself, but shying away from the difficulty and the pain of others. So I live much of my life, I believe, in this realm of the devas. While many people in this society struggle with hunger, struggle with insecurity, have no feeling of their own safety, I live comfortably. Right? Some are thrown in jail, in many cases unjustly. The word in Buddhism for hell is ground prison, jigoku in Japanese. And so the sense of being confined to suffering. That's a world that I don't know. And yet I turned my eyes away from that for much of this time. So I cannot claim that this world that we live in resembles the Pure Land, this world of the Buddha's enlightenment described in the sutras. Because in this world, there are winners and losers. There are people who receive benefits and others who face great difficulty. It said in the larger sutra, in the foundational teaching of our tradition, tells the story of a king who looked upon this world, a person of great comfort, who lived as a deva. He lived with all the power, all of the comfort, and he looked upon the world and he was able to dwell in the human realm and see and hear the suffering of others. And he set out to provide liberation for others. And his path was not the path of using his power, using his might. It was the path of seeking the truth. He relinquished all of his wealth, all of his power. He knew that true liberation wasn't found in these material things, wasn't found in his power as a king, but it was found in seeking the truth and in truly listening and observing. And so he dedicated lifetime after lifetime to understanding, why is it that people suffer? What can be done to bring about their liberation? And after that long, long period of reflection and study, he established 48 vows. He made promises and said, I will create a world of enlightenment. We call that world the Pure Land. And that is the world to which we aspire as people of the Nembutsu. When we say the words Namo Amida Butsu, we turn our ears to the Buddha's teaching. We endeavor to live as true humans with a heart awakened to the difficulty of others. When I hear this story of Amida Buddha, I am awakened to the truth that my own liberation begins by first dwelling in this human realm. Among these six realms, we say that the human realm is the best realm, the most precious realm, that birth in the human realm is truly a gift, because birth in the human realm brings with it the opportunity to hear the Dharma, and to hear the voices of one another, and to awaken the heart of compassion. And this hearing the voices of others is the first step on the Bodhisattva path, the first step on our path to realizing a life of peace and bliss, to realizing peace in our society and peace in our hearts. My usual way of thinking, which we call the bumbu or the foolish mind, is to think, as long as I'm safe and comfortable, everything's okay. As long as my little bubble, my little comfortable world, everything is okay, then everything is fine and I have no cause for concern. But if we live in that way, we find that eventually, at some point, that bubble gets popped. And I think as a society, that bubble is bursting in a big way in these last couple of weeks. We're seeing that some of us, myself, living comfortably, well, there are many who live with great difficulty. And so in this time of uncertainty, I turn my ears to the Buddha and I hear this story of Dharmakara, the king, who set out to listen and to hear the suffering of others. And then in this hearing, my mind turns and I receive this Bodhisattva mind, this mind that recognizes that my happiness, my peace are only realized when all beings realize peace and happiness together. And this is our way of living in the Nembutsu. These words, Namo Amida Butsu, they are the voice of the Buddha calling to us, saying, I wish for your peace and happiness, but not just for yourself. Open your heart and realize that this wish is for all beings. It's written very clearly in the sutras that in the world of the Buddha, there are no hungry ghosts, there are no hells, there are no animals. No one must live in fear for their lives. Nobody must face the suffering of confinement. Nobody must face the difficulty of hunger, not having the things that they need. And so we see that contrast and we see this world is not the world of the Buddha's enlightenment, but we aspire to that. We direct our lives to that and to bring others together, to journey together with others so that we may realize together birth in that world of peace and bliss. And so as we aspire for liberation, it's not just liberation from the realm of the animals and the hell beings and the hungry ghosts, but it's liberation also from the realm of the devas and the asuras, from this human realm. The realm of the devas where we ignore the suffering of others, living just in our own comfort. To hear the Dharma is to be liberated from that, but hearing the needs of others. The asuras are very interesting and very significant. The asuras are considered to be one of the good realms because they can hear the Dharma. The asura realm is the realm of competition, the realm of caring for and protecting others. It's not a bad realm, but it's a dangerous realm because in the realm of asuras, well, we set out to compete and to improve our own lives, which is a worthy undertaking in itself. We cannot get so wrapped up in our own achievement that we bring about difficulty for others. As we set aside to protect our own families and protect our own communities, it's a slippery slope to fall into the hell realm, the realm of anger and aggression, to lose the ability to hear one another. Our bishop, Reverend Marvin Harada, in reflecting upon these tragic events and the tragic death of George Floyd, talked about losing humanity. He said, for a person to be able to take another person's life in that manner, they have lost touch with their humanity. They've lost touch with that ability to hear. Right there, right on top of someone, not able to hear the words, I can't breathe, I'm dying. Right? To lose that ability to hear is to fall into the hell realm. And so the Buddha's compassion calls us to wake up and to hear one another, to hear the difficulties, to hear the anger and the frustration in our community, and to reflect upon which realm are we dwelling in? For me, I ask myself, am I dwelling in the realm of the devas protected by asuras? Or am I able to dwell in this human realm, hearing together the Buddha's wish for all of us to awaken wisdom and compassion? When we can dwell in this human realm, we have truly received the gift of human life. We have been born as a human. We recognize that all of these people, black, white, Asian, whatever their ethnicity, whatever their community, whatever their experience, that we all together share in this human existence. We all together share in the Buddha's wish for us to realize a life of peace and bliss. Simply listen to one another. Hear the Buddha's compassion in the Dharma. So I'll conclude my reflections. Once again, let us hear these words of our pledge. Please join me in Gassho. Realizing the gift of life I have received, I shall strive to live each day to its fullest, like the Buddha who tirelessly works to liberate all.
Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namang Da Butsu, Namang Da Butsu, Namang Da Butsu, Namang Da Butsu.